spins a web any size. Catches seeds just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
Paul, how are you? You were busy this weekend.
I'm great. Last week and this weekend, I was at Show Canada, which was an absolutely amazing show.
Did you see some of my good friends over there?
I sure did. And everybody sent their regards. Wanted to know why you weren't up there on Grouse Mountain looking at grizzly bears with the rest of us.
Did you see some bears?
We did. Lions and tigers and bears. No, just bears.
Ah, okay.
They have a bear sanctuary at the top of Grouse Mountain in Vancouver. And we took the gondola ride up there. I mean, it was just great. Nuria and Carrie and the whole crew up there put on a spectacular show. I was able to moderate a panel up there. It was just a great week. And I'll tell you, Mike, the enthusiasm that the Canadian exhibitors have is amazing for not just the movie theater experience, but this is a group that knows movies. And there was actually an interactive trivia contest during dinner Tuesday night, I believe, of the convention. And I was shocked. Everybody's looking at me like, oh, Paul, you'll know all this. They were way better than me. They would show like a tiny clip of a movie and you had to guess the movie. I mean, I'm talking about like a 5-second clip and they just run through them. You had to write them down.
What was the panel that you ended up moderating?
It was with Jim Orr and Rob Cousins, so Universal and Cineplex. And we were just talking about the state of the industry, particularly related to Canada. In the Comscore data, we've seen that Canada accounts for around 10% of the yearly box office, but it's been increasing. Also, though, very consistent over the years. Went back many years. Canada is just tried and true in terms of the movie going and the interest in movie going and just great exhibitors up there, big and small. So that was really great. Like, as we know, CinemaCon is this huge convention. And what each of these other conventions do, like CineShow and obviously Show East and of course Show Canada, is that there are parts of this industry that are very dedicated to the movie theater experience. But instead of it being just this massive ecosystem of people at an event, you get like a more in-depth and up-close and personal view of the marketplace and what those who work in exhibition and on the studio side as representatives for the various studios in Canada, what they're doing and how passionate they are about movie going. So it was a great week.
Well, and one of the great things about our friends up in Canada, as you're alluding to, is they're very communal. It's a very tight-knit group up there.
Yeah, I was kind of really blown away by it. And when I was up on, I gave a presentation and I had to go off script for a minute and just give a shout out to the whole group there. Just having a great time. It's much more informal, which I love. Again, like we both said, the passion for movies in Canada and also the regional differences in how movies are programmed depending on, it's a very diverse community all over Canada in terms of each province has its individual makeup. So theater managers and owners, obviously, but really the theater managers who are on the ground, they're programming movies and tailoring that experience to the local market. So it's very much targeted in terms of how they're marketing, knowing their audience and the demographics. And it's really cool.
Fantastic. And then you rushed back. And this wasn't one of those Room Raider appearances. You were live in studio and CNN on Friday.
That's right, at the LA Bureau. I haven't been in studio, Mike, doing a TV hit, especially a live one, probably obviously before the pandemic. So it's been 3 or 4 years. It felt like going home because I remember that early on in my career in the mid-90s in that CNN building in Hollywood, that's where I did my first live appearance on air where I was scared to death. I think in the control room, they could hear my heart beating through my chest and through the microphone, the lavalier mic. But it was great. I was on with Abby Phillip. We talked about Arnold Schwarzenegger making some very nice comments about his buddy Bruce Willis. And then just as a broader topic, what has happened with action stars? Do they exist anymore in the classic sense? And then talking about who could be the future action stars. I brought up Ana de Armas because I think we got locked into what we perceive as who action stars are. And in the classic sense, it is the Stallones, the Willises, the Schwarzeneggers. But then in the newer sense, look at Charlize Theron in Mad Max Fury Road. I mean, she's kicking ass all over that movie. So I think we have to broaden our minds on what is an action star. But in the classic and traditional sense, Bruce Willis, you know, we could spend a whole hour talking about his career. I wanted to make the point that he's a great action star, but also a great actor with a lot of range. Comedies, and he did very introspective movies, just a great actor overall.
you're right. Everyone remembers Bruce Willis to be this big action star and, you know, headlining the Die Hard franchise and other films. But what they don't recall is when he did Die Hard, the first one, he was not an action star. He was a TV guy who was on Moonlighting. And if you read all the articles on Die Hard, it was a big gamble that they took putting him in that film. And the studio wasn't sold that that was going to work.
Well, Mike, remember when TV stars, and we're going way back, and Mike and I remember this because we lived through that era, obviously. But like in 1988, when Die Hard came out, very few TV stars, American TV stars, could make that transition. Tom Selleck tried it. There was a movie, I think, called Runaway. Other stars had tried it, and it seemed like a square peg in a round hole. Like, it didn't make sense to people to have a TV star, maybe in a commercial in another country, but not on the big screen. There was this weird divide there. But Bruce Willis, I mean, having, like you said, with Moonlighting, I don't know if he had done Blind Date yet. That may have come after.
It was right around the same time. But remember, Blind Date was more of a screwball comedy.
It's more like the TV show Moonlighting, right?
Yeah. And Die Hard, that was the first of the kind of anti-hero action movies. Because, you know, if you remember the premise of Die Hard at the beginning, because the series kind of morphs over the course of the films, but in that very first film, here's a reluctant hero. The guy's in the building.
Yeah.
The only reason he's doing anything is because his wife's there and he feels that there's incompetence going on around him. He doesn't do anything. The situation's going to get worse. But it's not like he's looking for a fight. If anything, he's looking to just let the good guys take care of it. And it's not until he's forced into service that he goes for it.
Exactly. And that was very unusual in the sense that he didn't look like this muscle-bound guy. He's running around barefoot with this white undershirt on, or whatever you want to call it. And he just looks like everybody else, but he's kicking ass and taking names and being funny and self-deprecating at the same time. Then Willis does something like The Sixth Sense, where he plays a psychologist, Dr. Malcolm Crowe, I think was his character name. And then he does Pulp Fiction as Butch Coolidge, the boxer. So he had a lot of range. Just a great actor. And I think often people get put in a box. And yes, how cool for him to be one of the top action stars of all time, but also to have an actor with enough range to do any type of genre, any type of movie.
Well, and I think, you know, looking ahead, I like your call of Ana de Armas becoming the next breakout action star, because as everybody knows, she recently wrapped filming Ballerina, which is set in the John Wick world, and Keanu Reeves is actually in the film as well. From what I understand, the movie really delivers, and the movie has all of the action kind of setups and sequences that you are accustomed to from the John Wick world will be in this movie. So I think that's a really good call.
And I pulled that out of my hat, but I remember in No Time to Die, Ana de Armas had a very notable and memorable scene in the movie. She's only in the movie probably 15 minutes, but she made a huge impression. Absolutely. So that was the CNN piece. That was fun. On the way home, live hit from Show Canada. And we had a great weekend at the box office, Mike, as well.
That was kind of going to be my segue. You're in demand in one of two ways, Paul, when things are going well or when things are not going well. And in this case, things are humming along really nicely right now. This weekend, went back and looked at it. Do you realize this was the best June 2nd weekend, or the 22nd weekend of the year? So as everybody knows, the calendar falls in funky ways. It's the 22nd weekend of the year.
That's right.
It was the best 22nd weekend of the year on record. And that includes a lot of Memorial Days. Now, there was one Memorial Day, I believe it was like 2004, that the four-day came in at like $248 million. Outside of that, this was the biggest weekend period. Nobody saw it coming. No one.
It did triple, right? Triple what the first Spider-Verse movie opened to, which was like $35 million. This did 121 thereabouts.
Yeah. I mean, if you actually think about it, it was more than triple. It was about 3.5 times the first movie.
Yeah.
All of the pre-release projections that I saw had the movie doing anywhere from $75 to $80 million total for the 3 days.
Right. I think that's going to really impact this weekend with Transformers and the following weekend, because that was the tracking. That means every other studio was thinking, well, Spider-Man in its second weekend will do like 30. Well, it's going to be a tight race this weekend, I think, with Transformers.
You are now bringing up another interesting point, and that is, you know, from my studio days, it used to be once you get into summer, every night's a Saturday night. That would be the tagline, meaning that the amount of gross that is coming through is just that the number adds up really quickly. And if you look at what they did on Monday and what they did on Tuesday, and we're recording on Wednesday, we're a little later this week than normally. But if you look at what they did on Monday and Tuesday, 13 million on Monday, 15 plus last night, it's another 28 million on top of that. So they're pushing $150 million. We haven't even finished the first week of gross. We still got two more days to go. So they're going to surpass the total gross of the first film, you know, by the time we get into the next weekend. And to your point, when you look at something like Transformers that comes out this weekend, which is a similar audience, yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a competition for the box office dollar, because I don't think anybody necessarily saw that there was $120 million gross coming out of this one.
As always, you make great points, Mike. I mean, I think the whole thing, looking at the first film, which came out in the middle of December of 2018, totally different time frame, but that opened at $35.4 million, had a 5x multiple, wound up with $190.5 million domestic. That's a case where you had a first movie, I think, where there was a little bit of not confusion, but I think a lot of people didn't understand. Are these the same characters from live action? Why is this movie PG? It's animated. The characters have different names. But then the first film, Into the Spider-Verse, won the Academy Award and also was a big hit on, I believe it was on Netflix. That was one of those cases where you had a sequel, this one, besting the original by a large margin. I think back to first Austin Powers movie. People didn't really know how to define it. At the time, they didn't know if it was really a straight-up parody. Was it an action film, a spy film? And then people discovered it, and the second film did much better. And it opens up a whole revenue stream for Sony, and they don't even have their own streaming platform, but they don't really need it. This movie did so well on Netflix, or was seen by so many people, that it just made it a must-see movie.
Couple of things. I think we'll tie it back to the whole Die Hard conversation. If you remember, Die Hard 1 was... everyone looks back on that as kind of the kickoff, as we were talking about, of what we call today the typical action movie. You know, when that movie opened up, Paul, what was the total gross on that movie? Around 60 million?
The way you're thinking here, I love, Mike, because that first film actually opened in limited release initially. So July 15, 1988, the first Die Hard opened to like $601,000. I'm just looking at this now, in just 21 theaters. So showing that nobody really knew if this was going to be a hit. They kind of quietly released it.
What did it top out at? What was the final gross?
Oh, it topped out at, wow, $81.3 million. And Mike, you're making a great point, because when it went finally into wide release, the first Die Hard, which was its second weekend in a whopping 1,276 locations. Remember, 1988, that was a lot of theaters. In its first wide release, the first Die Hard, 7.1 million.
So to show you that we're really putting a lot of thought in the structure of these podcasts and how we're going to tie in this action to Spider-Verse, and I'm kidding, of course, because we just ended up there. But Die Hard, like Spider-Verse, the first movie, was a find, and that set up an entire franchise. What we're seeing now is the second movie is not a find. The second movie is a juggernaut across the Spider-Verse. And you're looking at $120 million. And Paul, we're well on our way to your $4 billion summer that you've been alluding to.
I hope so, Mike. I've been going out on a major limb, man.
Think about it. You know, so the big question everybody had was coming into the summer was, well, you had $718 million from Top Gun last year. How are you going to replace that? Well, guess what? Spider-Verse is going to pick up a lot of that slack and overperform to a huge, huge number. And again, we're just a month into summer right now. There's a ton of other films that are on their way.
That's right.
And what I think and what it feels like is that we're just seeing the momentum at the box office pick up. And the other good news is this weekend was not a one-trick pony, Paul.
I agree.
When you look at what happened this weekend, we had Spider-Verse at 120.6. Little Mermaid, week two, comes in at 41.39. Boogeyman, which was an interesting one, because if you looked at Boogeyman early on Friday, it looked like, wow, this movie's going to probably miss for whatever reason, and maybe they're going to come in at 7 or 8. And then when you looked at it Friday night, it's like, well, maybe it's going to be 9 or 10. And then Saturday morning is 10 or 11. Well, they ended up coming in at the end of the day. They just kept getting better. 12.36. Now, I know that's a little under where the pre-released estimates were, but given where it had started on Friday, and for a movie that was originally greenlit and produced to go to Hulu, that's a great result.
It is. And they screened it at CinemaCon. And, you know, horror movies, they generally have been a mainstay of the box office, particularly over the pandemic. And now that we're out of that. But yeah, you're right. I think it did less than what maybe some had expected, but came on strong over the weekend. And you know what? Lisa's studios are putting all these movies out there. Guardians is out there. Fast X. Mario Brothers is still going strong at week 9.
Well, you got Mario, which is now pushing $570 million of box office, which is unbelievable when you think about it. So as we start talking about, you know, what we think 2023 will end up, and, you know, I know you and I have kind of put the benchmark at right around $10 billion as our Mendoza line for all of you baseball fans out there.
That's right.
You know, you start looking at it, Paul, and you start looking at, okay, what is Spider-Verse going to actually top out at? You know, it got an A cinema score, opens to 120. It's got Every Day is a Saturday happening to it. I mean, is that a movie that 400, you know, 450, somewhere around there?
And remember, basically, all of its gross will be counted in the summer 18 weeks because it's only June, right? So
right.
The lion's share of its box office will be earned and count in this summer. And then, you know, you look at Transformers, but then the week after you had The Flash, The Blackening, and Elemental all opening on the same weekend. And we've gone through these on previous podcasts, so we don't need to go through every movie, but it's just chock-a-block full of films every week. And again, August, I think, is going to be so much better. We went out with a whimper last year. And again, we've hit all these topics on the podcast, but it's worth noting that we're going to have a strong summer all the way up through Labor Day, not just coasting after the end of August.
The other thing, too, to bring up is that we've been touting these movies and talking about how they're going to deliver, and now we're seeing the results. And so now you're seeing, you know, okay, so we've been saying, okay, Spider-Verse is going to be a big film. Now, none of us had it doing 120 and ending up 450, wherever it's going to go. Well, guess what? Here it is. It delivered.
Yeah.
And these other movies that we've been talking about week in, week out, how are those movies going to perform? And not everyone's going to be the belle of the ball.
Well,
but
Mike, I've noticed, sorry to interrupt you, Mike, but I've noticed, you just get me so psyched up about all these topics, but I've noticed a trend, and a good one, that if the movies are good, and you know, that's a subjective measure, but if the social media sentiment is strong, like with Guardians of the Galaxy and John Wick and others, and of course with Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, that we're seeing these films have legs, that audiences have a lot of options for entertainment. And that doesn't mean they don't want to go to the theater, but if they're going to go, they want to, you know, they want to see a good movie. And I think that's really played out well. And I think that'll hold Spider-Man, like you said, in good stead in the coming week. So lots of good stuff happening right now. And Mike, I really hope you're right, because I've been going out on that limb about, now look, if we don't get to $4 billion, it's not the end of the world. But if we get within that range, if we're up there in, because you know, last summer did $3.4 billion domestically, we have many more titles this year, and August is loaded, and we have a lot of big films out there. We'll see what happens, Mike, and we'll be watching this very carefully on Ticket to Ride, our podcast for ComScore. And of course, I'm Paul DeGarabedian, Senior Media Analyst for ComScore, and Mike Polydoros, my incredible co-host, President of Paper Airplane Media.
Before we close out, wanted to mention a couple of just interesting things, Paul, that are going to get you to your $4 billion.
Okay, please help me here, brother.
This is the 16th weekend in a row that we've had a film gross in excess of $30 million. Not bad for a business that was pronounced dead 18 months ago.
Yep.
And then the fifth consecutive weekend, we've had a film do over $60 million. So when you think about it, there is no shortage of people wanting to come to the movies. And when you look at, let's go to our handy dandy list, you know, I think we're running right now something like 8 movies ahead of where we were last year at this time. Box office gross is running something like 28-29% up ahead of where we were last year.
We're right around 30%, you know, getting in that 30% range ahead of last year. I think that's a good comp. I mean, everybody wants to compare to 2019. You know, that was a different era, but that's fine. But certainly this is great news for the industry.
One last thing I think we need to discuss, and that is we're talking about how amazing Spider-Verse performed over the weekend. I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about how amazing the entire Spider-Man franchise has been over the course of its history. I looked it up before we came on and recorded.
Where'd you look it up, Mike?
Comscore.
Thank you.
Paul, do you realize you're looking at almost $3.5 billion between the Spider-Man films that have been produced?
I love that. Why that is so cool is because I remember when the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man opened May 3rd of 2002, that weekend had the distinction of being the first movie to ever open over $100 million. I'll never forget it.
And every iteration of the character has performed at the box office.
But how cool, Mike. Now you're giving me food for thought, because think of the genius move of creating this animated PG world for Spider-Man. It just opens up a whole new, well, frankly, a revenue stream, but also creatively to draw in younger viewers. You know, let's talk about the young moviegoers of today or your future moviegoers, to get them into this whole Spider-Verse situation at a PG rating. That's money in the bank. That's an annuity for the future. Super Mario, another PG movie, doing incredibly well.
You brought up something earlier this week. I heard you mention on one of your hits, and that was, this was, what, the second biggest animated movie of the year, the sixth biggest animated opening of all time. Pretty impressive when you think about it.
And if you think about it, too, I mean, this is kind of belaboring the point, but like, a PG movie, generally, you're going to have more child admissions, let's say.
Yes.
Which makes the overall number even more impressive. So very good stuff, Mike. I love it. Spider-Man spun a web of success. Spider-Man had legs, Mike. Keep going with this. We're going to keep going with the spider analogies.
There's a lot of spider puns to be done. It'd be interesting to hear somebody actually like lay out what it is about the Spider-Man character and the Spider-Man storyline that, whether it is Tobey Maguire, whether it is Andrew Garfield, whether it is Tom Holland, whether it is an animated version, what is it that makes people gravitate to that character?
Can I give my two cents? And I'll do it very quickly. So here's the thing. The Spider-Man character is basically a teenager, self-deprecating, optimistic, fun, funny, out to kind of have a good time, hasn't been jaded, isn't brooding and sad in a cave somewhere. Isn't fighting the whole world. You know, it's just, for me, it's just forever young, that character, and just has a lot of optimism there. And not in a corny way. And Tom Holland and everyone who's, you know, I got to give it up to all the Spider-Mans, the Spider-Men, whatever you want to call them, that they've all done a great job. And Tobey Maguire, you still got to give, and by the way, No Way Home was so great bringing the characters back together. But there's others who could articulate it much better than I. But there is just something about that Spider-Man character, the whole Spider-Man universe. But again, genius building that into an animated PG realm as well.
You look at a couple of weeks down the road when, as you mentioned, we have Elemental, we have Flash, Spider-Verse. That is going to be one hell of a weekend at the box office.
And you know what? That's not going to stop, Mike. If you look at Dead Reckoning Part 1, Mission Impossible opens on July 12th. Then a week and a half later, Barbie and Oppenheimer open.
Very optimistic. It's a good time to be in the theatrical business. I think as down on everything as everybody was 18 months ago, they're looking positive. Now, of course, we would be remiss if we didn't mention there are a couple of storm clouds out there right now. There's obviously the writer strike, and there is the actor strike that is looming as well. So
that's right.
There are a couple of hurdles that need to get over. It would be awful if the momentum that the business is experiencing was all of a sudden slowed down because of contract and labor negotiations. I hope all parties figure it out, because the last thing we need is to have another stutter start.
You're exactly right. We can talk more about that on our next episode. And by the way, we're going to have some special guests. We can't name them yet, over the next couple of weeks, that have agreed to be on the podcast. So Mike, we're going to look forward to. It's always fun to have special guests on the program. So we have at least two coming up.
Yeah, we've got people coming from different parts of the industry to give their perspective on how they got here and what they see going forward. You know, it's always fun, whether it's somebody from the production side or somebody from the exhibition side or the distribution side, just to get their perspective on what's going on.
And we have them all on Ticket to Ride.
Paul, it's been fantastic.
It's been great, Mike, and we'll take you out now with a little music.
Take care, Paul.
Thanks, Mike.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves, just like flies. Look out.